spell that out. So that in 6 months' time, when heavy drinking has killed the brain cells that understood this code, it will be fractionally easier for me to understand it again. The argument is, but arrays can't be negative. You've never heard of pi. Anything can be anything in Perl. Okay, yeah, this maybe is overkill, but I like to be explicit. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to control structures. General principles are, I like to avoid the statement scope control structures. What are they? They are the post qualifiers. Blah, 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 if something or other. Blah, 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 while something or other, for something or other. The only time that I like to use those postfix qualifiers is on a statement that is a flow of control statement. Like a next, a last, a redo, a return, God help us, a go-to. Not saying go-to is a good thing. Otherwise, I like to see up front what my condition is, and then I like to have a little block that's indented that says, and here's what you do about it. Why? Because it saves me time later. Almost no serious thing that is going to be done as a result of an if is a one-liner, unless you are changing control. Almost all the time, you will start off with, if something like this, do something. And then you'll realize, oh, I better put some debugging in there. So if something like this, warn, blah, 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 then do something. Now, as soon as you go from one statement to two statements, your postfix if, while, for, whatever, ceases to be readable or even reasonable to do. So you've got to turn it around at that stage. So my argument is, why turn it around at that stage? Why not have it turned around right away the first time? The thing to remember about writing best practice code is you are not writing literature. You are not trying to write elegant code, code that will be looked on in pages to come as beautiful. You are trying to write code that will be looked upon in pages to come as comprehensible. Okay? And boring, straightforward ways of writing work better. You can see this whenever you look at a manual for a video recorder. The artistic kind of way that the people in Japan who write these manuals create them. Now, I think beat poetry is terrific. But not in video recorder instruction manuals. Yeah, that's what they mostly seem to be. I would like simple, straightforward statements that didn't have any subordinate clauses or anything in them. Do this, do that, do the other. Has anyone visited any of the nuclear missile silos, the decommissioned ones that are kind of dotted around Arizona and the like? If you go and have a look at the manuals for them, they are the most boring things to read. Now, they're just single statements about five words each. Turn the key. Press the button. Pray to God. The whole point about that is that they are deliberately simple and straightforward and not elegant and artistic, and they don't use the subjunctive, and they don't use any very neat features. There is very little metaphor in them. Code is like that. You might not be trying to blow up the Soviet Union, but you're probably trying to keep your business alive. Write code that is boring and straightforward. And these are some of the keys. The other thing is, I don't like manual iteration. I don't like to have an iterated variable that says, I'm now at 0, I'm now at 1, I'm now at 2. If I'm going to go through a list of elements out of an array, I just like to go through the elements of the array. So let me show you. See like for statement. Who likes the see like for statement? Good. Now I'm not going to get a lot of argument on this. They're really only necessary when you have some kind of unusual loop behavior. I swear I have seen people for my $i equals 0, comma, $i less than 10, comma, $i++. That's just wrong. So, when I see something like this, I have to think about what that's going to do. I have to work through the relationship between the start value and the increment value and the stop value to work out what the behavior there is. And the behavior there is apparently go from 4 to max, but only give me the even ones. Only give me the even ones. And you can work that out if you sit there and look at it, because that's a particularly simple example. There are plenty of more complicated examples. Here's the same bit of code. Go from 4 to max and don't do the odd ones. Now, is that any quicker? Well, it would depend on your system. When I benchmark it, I couldn't actually get a difference between them that was significant enough. But this one is a lot more maintainable. Because it just tells me up front, I ain't going to do the odd ones. Going to go from this to this. Going to ignore the odd ones. Now, I guess if you made max big enough, there might be a difference. Or if my jump was big enough, it might be better to do it the other way around. But in that case, I would still rather do some kind of mapping operation to just give me the elements that I was interested in before I started iterating them. Don't like the three-part bullet. Your mileage may vary. I don't like it. I don't use it. The other thing I don't like to do is the subscript in loops. I like to write something like this. Take my clients, and for each of them, do this, do that, do the other. It doesn't have to be object-oriented, it's, you know, just get each of the values that I'm interested in and act on it directly. The nice thing about that is when I do something like this, there isn't even a copy involved. This becomes an alias for each of these in turn, so it's very efficient. It's also very clean. Note the use of the singular form for the plural array. Makes it easier to understand what's going on. Some people say next client. I'm fine with that. Personally, I don't feel the need to. It's a decision every coder has to make for herself. This I don't like. I don't like saying, here are the numbers you have to go through, and then just pull it out 3 times. That's just crazy. That's less efficient. It's less readable. It has no rhythmic features whatsoever, except that it also gives you access to the index each time around. And sometimes you don't have a choice about that. The same thing is true for the values of a hash. From 5-6 onwards, how many people are using 5-6 or later? Good to see. From 5-6 onwards, you say values of something, you get back the actual values inside the hash, not copies of them. 5 to 5, 6, you got back a list of copies. But now you get the actual ones back. So if you say, go through the values of these contacts and change each one, it will really change the thing that's inside the hash. That's the way it would change the thing that was inside the array. It's efficient, it leads to cleaner code. Now I can't say avoid it because of course sometimes you need to be able to also get hold of the index at the same time and you don't really have a choice. But in those cases what I inevitably do is I make a copy of the thing that I need to extract first and then I just use the copy. So I don't have to extract it 3 separate times. That sometimes falls out naturally. If you go with this thing of always iterating the values rather than the indices, then when you do need an index, you can take all that code that was using the values, move it down a line, in other words, a paragraph, put in this initial copy out of the index, and just continue on. So it's easy to kind of grow that code if you need to. The other thing that I'm really keen on is the lexical alias module. How many people have seen the lexical alias module? Definitely one to have a look at. What this thing does is this allows you to not make that copy, to create a lexical variable that is an alias for the lookup. So I could have written this instead. Alias this thing to this lexical variable. And you can actually declare the lexical variable as part of the aliasing operation. What that says is from this line onwards, except another name for that, from what I looked up at that point. So changes to that variable will change the original one. So you get the advantage of having both the keys or the indices, but you also have the advantage of having an L-valued version of the value that you're trying to change. Definitely worth a look at. Very neat, very clean way of doing things. Very robust and efficient. The scope on an alias doesn't matter. What matters is the scope on the alias that you set. So it being a lexical variable, at the end of the loop, it goes. So the next time you come around the loop, you get a new one, alias to the next element, as you would hope. Now, what we used to do in this kind of situation was we would do a type blob assignment. And that was about 1,000 years in purgatory every time you did that. This is much cleaner. Okay. I said that I didn't mind dollar underscore in loops, and I don't. What I do mind is dollar underscore in loops. That is, I don't mind you using dollar underscore in loops, I just don't want to see you using dollar underscore in loops. So my rule of thumb here is, if I can use dollar underscore in a purely implicit way, as the default argument for subroutine, as the default match for a pattern match or a substitute, then I'm okay about using dollar underscore. But if I ever have to actually write dollar underscore anywhere, then I'm no longer happy with it. Because it's not self-documenting. It doesn't say what's going on. So I'm perfectly okay if you do something like this. If I need to refer to dollar candidate to the actual variable that I'm going through this loop with, then I write it out with a sensible name that allows me to read what's going on and see who's being changed and where things are happening. I'm not happy with this. Many people knew beforehand that LC defaulted to dollar underscore. Yeah, that's right. So that was what, about a fifth of the audience? Probably translates to about a fifth of your programming team knows that. So you are condemning them to the man page when they come across this code. Okay? Writing dollar underscore equals string plus dollar, that's just evil. What the hell does that mean? Well, the only way I can tell what the hell that means is by actually going through and working out what the process is here. Another evil thing about using explicit dollar underscores is as soon as you put this loop inside another loop, all hell breaks loose. Because there can only be one dollar underscore at any one time, and it's really tricky to keep track of which one you're using. So I like named variables, except in very little loops, where all I'm doing is saying, for each of these things, do a substitution on it, or print it. Then I'm okay with dollar underscore. You may decide that you're never okay with dollar underscore, and I'm okay with you never being okay with dollar underscore. Oh, the other thing not to do is leave off the mind. How many people, we're all friends here, what happens in this room stays in this room. How many people have ever done a book where they didn't put the mind in? Yeah, ever. Even when you were young and you didn't inhale, but you did it. Yeah, don't ever do it. Yeah, well don't live in that time. Okay, so the problem is people write code like this. They say, I'm looking for the client that I'm going to talk to next. So I'm going to go through all the clients, and I've already declared this to be a lexical, so I'm okay. So I'm going to go through this, and I'm going to say, okay, find the next one who's on hold on the phone, and at that point, let's jump out and then resume that conversation. Now, apart from the fact that I'm not saying if client, because there mightn't be any, then there is a much more subtle and dangerous problem with this, and it is not obvious. Everywhere else in Perl, when you create a lexical variable and then you refer to that variable, it's the same variable. Lexically scoped, strict doesn't mind it, everybody's happy. Except here. When you do this, when you say for client, This creates a localized package variable called $client that hides that lexical variable. That is not an error you are going to find quickly. Or rather, it is an error you're going to find quickly as the stock market crashes. Now, the point that I would say about this is that the right solution is always to use my variables. And I've got this in purple, not in blue, because this is not working code. This hasn't solved the problem.